Die groot trek saam Dopie en Nina, weekdae tussen 3 en 6.
Eventueel, terwyl ons groot word, is almal verskriklik gefassineer deur dinosourusse. En ons almal het 'n gunsteling dinosourus gehad.
Kyk, ek was 'n groot Power Rangers fan.
Ja, hulle was almal dinosourusse.
Hulle was almal dinosaurs. Dis die enigste dinosaur.
Die Ninja Turtles is eintlik dinosaurs.
Regtig?
Jy nie geweet nie.
Nee, hulle is turtles.
Ja.
Ninja Turtles.
Maar ons sal nou bietjie gesels oor die oorlewenis. En dan het ons almal hierdie movie gekyk. Jurassic Park. Onthou jy dit?
My baie my senuwees gemaak.
Luister. Toe hulle eers in daai karretjies vaszit in die park. Toe is Jurassic Park nou nie meer so amazing soos wat ek gedink het dit is nie. Maar ja, ek onthou hierdie scene. Ja, wat die aard. Jy weet hulle so oor die vlaktes kyk en al hierdie die migrasie van die dinosourusse. Amazing. So, het is daar nou 'n nuusartikel wat uitgekom het. Van 'n splinter nuwe fossiel wat opgegrawe is in Zimbabwe.
Ja.
En dit is obviously groot nuus, want hulle sê hulle het hierdie skelet van hierdie dinosourus nou in die ontdek. In die Mbire distrik van Zimbabwe. En dis groot, wanneer laas het ons gehoor van 'n dinosourus skelet?
Wel, veral in Afrika.
Ja.
Ek dink daar's baie goed wat reg oor die wêreld gebeur, maar in Afrika en so naby aan ons, een van ons buurlande, is dit baie groot.
Presies. So toe moes ons met iemand professioneel praat daaroor. En dis professor Jonah
Schwanier.
Very fancy. Oulala, dat is as far as my French goes. I hope it is French. Dr. Professor Jonah.
Hi.
Hello, thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you for that ringing introduction.
Is your last name, is it French?
It's French-Canadian, actually, but I'm fully American and now partly South Africanized.
Fantastic.
Hey, so how long have you been at Wits, Professor?
I moved to Wits in 2012. I was living in New York and got the job, and I've really never looked back.
So is this a hobby? Did it start out as a hobby? Eventually, you decided, you know what, I enjoy dinosaurs. I'm just going to make a living out of it, or...?
It sort of started as a way to delay growing up. I'd done my undergraduate degree, and I thought I tried a couple years of work and thought, geez, I'm not ready for this. And then I got a PhD, and kind of that started the whole thing rolling. And, you know, 20 years later, here I am.
So how was the move from New York City to Johannesburg?
Joburg City.
It was a bit of a difference. I'd come to South Africa twice before, and I'd gone straight to Grahamstown, to Makanda, and I just set foot in the airport. And so my first day of work at Wits was the first day I'd ever been in Johannesburg, and it's quite different from New York. But I've grown to really love Joburg, and I think it's one of the world's greatest cities.
Well, the one thing that I do wonder about is New York. You know, it's concrete jungle. I don't think there's a lot of fossils lying around in New York. So was coming to South Africa something good for your profession or for your job?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it was chasing this fantastic opportunity. You know, about two-thirds of South Africa's land surface has fossils on it, which means, you know, sort of, you know, we, on average, everyone has a fossil in their backyard.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I came chasing that opportunity.
Is this now an actual fact? Should I go home today and grab the shovel and start digging up my backyard?
It depends where you live. If you live in the Karoo, you have a much, much greater chance of hitting something. But there are other areas in the country that are quite rich in fossils as well, and from many different time periods.
Yeah, I was just asking, like, what types of fossils, you know, would you find, say, for instance, in the Karoo?
Well, so the Karoo sort of tells the story of the origin of mammals.
Yeah.
So some of the earliest relatives of mammals are there. And as you come sort of north and east, if you're on the N1 heading towards Joburg, you begin to get the origins of dinosaurs. And then, you know, you get to the cradle of humankind and you start to get the origins of us.
Wow. Well, we're going to talk about that in a little while. I know, what is that one? It's a very famous fossil that was found there in the cradle of humankind. But, before we get to that, just what is your background or your exact, title? You know, is it a professor of, dinos or is it professor of Jurassicness?
I wanted to be the dinosaur guy. I just wanted that to be my title, but they wouldn't allow me to choose that.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I know. So I've got this, like, you know, to go with my last name, I've got this highfalutin title of Professor of Comparative Paleobiology, which basically means I go out and look at a lot of dinosaurs and I try to come up with some generalities about how they lived and how they grew and, you know, how big they got, what they ate, those kinds of questions.
So to us, you'll just be the dino guy.
Yeah.
I'm happy to be the dino guy.
Well, more with the dino guy in a second. Ons gaan net gou vinnig na die verkeer toe en as ons terug is, gesels ons verder met Prof. Jonah. Ons gesels bietjie dinosourusse met Professor Jonah Schwanier. Schwanier? Want?
Schwanier.
Schwanier. En hy is van Wits af. Die ou weet alles as het kom by dinosourusse, waar hulle vandaan kom, hulle moes gelyk het en alske goed. Ek het baie vrae. Ons sal nou by dit uitkom, maar die hoofstorie en die rede hoekom ons besluit het ons moet praat oor hierdie is ietsie wat Nina in die nuus gedra het nie te lank terug nie.
Ja, so Jonah, the story that we read was about the scientists in Zimbabwe that discovered the remains of Africa's oldest dinosaur, which roamed the earth around 230 million years ago. You must have obviously read up about this or know a lot about this. Can you tell us a little bit more about this dinosaur that they found?
Sure, I'd be delighted to. And I should say that the people who described this dinosaur are members of a research team that I work with currently in Zim as well. So it's sort of a large, happy family.
Okay.
What these scientists report on is the discovery of a dinosaur named Imbirisaurus rothi. And it's named for the area as well as one of the pioneers of paleontology in Zim, a guy named Mike Roth, who actually worked here in South Africa late in his career. And this animal's sort of about 2 meters long. It's a small animal. And it's on the line that leads to things that, you know, most of your listeners will know, like Brontosaurus and Apatosaurus and Brachiosaurus, the giant sauropod dinosaurs, which were sort of multi-elephant size and had long necks and tiny heads. Mm. But this animal was sort of a, you know, a deep, deep ancestor of those animals. And it was still small. And in fact, it probably wasn't yet eating plants. It was probably eating a wide variety of sort of meat and vegetables and a bit of a more well-balanced diet, if you will.
So like an omnivore?
Yeah, an omnivore. That's exactly right.
Well done,
wow.
Amy.
Yeah, I sound so clever, yeah. Right?
So these fossils that they found, I mean, it's been there for millions and millions of years. Are they fully preserved still? Is it a full skeleton that you find there? Or what do you actually come across when you're looking for these kinds of fossils?
Well, this is sort of one of the great myths of paleontology, that there's complete dinosaur carcasses lying out there for us to discover. But often we find a few bits of the animal. Maybe we'll find a few, you know, a leg bone and an arm bone and some of the backbone or something. And we have to make some inferences about what the whole animal looked like. But in this case, it's reasonably complete. They have bits of the skull and the spine and many of the limb bones. So they have a really good idea of how big it was and what it ate and what part of the dinosaur family tree it went on. And those bones have been there for 230 million years. And in fact, a nice way to think about this is that T-Rex, right, the famous T-Rex, is closer to us in time than it is to Imbirisaurus.
Oh, wow.
So it's really, really old.
So what I take, what it is that you do is you kind of look at these fossils and then you color in the picture around how that they lived and stuff. So can you tell us, like, that thought process and how you do that?
Yeah, I'd be very happy to. Well, one of the things you can think about is when we go out and look for fossils, we're kind of, it's like going to Kruger, But it's just like going to Kruger 230 million years ago. So one of the things we want to do is sort of say, well, how many different species were here and how might those species have been interacting? Who are the predators? Who are the herbivores? Who are the omnivores? And not only that, how did those animals change over time? What kind of environments were they living in? Was there global warming at that time? Were they restricted in how far they could live, or did they live all over the world? And that's really the kinds of questions we try to answer as paleontologists.
So I read that dinosaur remains from the same era as the Imberosaurus.
Yes.
Yeah. The Imberosaurus was found only in South America and in India. So if you look at the world map, like, what does that mean, Jonah?
Yeah, this is fascinating. So at the time this dinosaur evolved, 230 million years ago, all of Earth's continents were glued together into a single giant continent called Pangaea, often called the supercontinent. Yeah, Pangaea. And at that time, you could walk from here to Buenos Aires, and you wouldn't get your feet wet. It's really, it was an interesting time for animals to evolve because they had great areas to distribute themselves amongst. In some of the first evidence that we've had for plate tectonics, that is that Earth's continents move over time, came from finding similar animals in places like Brazil and Argentina, and in South Africa's Karoo. And that evidence was recognized very, very early in sort of the 1920s. And it's been one of the key pieces of sort of biological information that says, yeah, over time, the face of the Earth changes.
So you were talking about thinking there might have been global warming, how many years ago, and
ice age or something like that, maybe.
So obviously we as humans are creating global warming or making it worse. What would in those days have brought about global warming?
Well, there are a variety of things. I mean, one is that, many of the livestock that we raise release methane, and methane is a global, it's a gas that contributes to global warming. And so the animals that lived on Earth at that time, and it's not just things like dinosaurs, it's all of Earth's biota, really, they would have contributed to the atmosphere and contributed potentially to global warming. But at that time, there was no Atlantic Ocean. In fact, the Atlantic Ocean is sort of a rift. It's a tear in Earth's crust that filled in with water and began pushing the continents apart right about the time this dinosaur lived. And you can imagine if you're going to tear open Earth's crust, you get a lot of lava coming out. You get a lot of volcanic activity. And volcanoes are also implemented in that sort of global warming.
But I guess an expedition like this and finding new fossils and new dinosaur species and that kind of thing. It's not just a guy walking around with a stick poking in the ground hoping to find something. What actually goes into an expedition and to make it a successful one?
Well, we start with sort of the geological maps of southern Africa, and these were commissioned in the 1960s as part of mineral prospecting goals of the various countries. And those geological maps say, hey, these rocks, these are the right age for you to find dinosaurs. And so we would focus on certain rocks identified on those maps. And then the second part is in fact, it's quite like what you described. We go there, we're prepared with our tools and so forth, but we spend long days walking back and forth on barren rock faces looking for that tiny bit of bone peeking out. And when we find it, then we go in with the equipment and we start using archival glue and we use, the stereotypical brushes and tiny picks and things, but also things like rock saws. And what we do is we isolate those fossil bones, and we try to bring them back to the lab in their containing rocks. And that allows us to, under a microscope, remove sort of the rocks that encase the bones piece by piece, often grain by grain, until we have the full representation of the skeleton or the fullest representation we can get.
So are you one of those guys that gets really excited about rocks as well?
I'm a rock fan, a big fan of rock. Not so much boy bands, more of a rock guy.
So, Johnny, in the article it mentions that this dinosaur is the oldest fossil found in Africa. What is the youngest one? Because you mentioned that T-Rex is closer to our age than to that dinosaur's age. So which is the youngest fossil found?
Well, I'll give you a couple of ideas. So in fact, it's not the oldest fossil found in Africa. There are potentially fossil microbial life found in the Barberton area, and those are 3.6 billion years old. But that's like way before dinosaurs evolved. It's just sort of single-celled algae and things like that. So we have this tremendously deep fossil record. But for dinosaurs, it really is among the oldest dinosaurs found in southern Africa. And as you look at the rocks around Lesotho today, you find dinosaurs that are about 200 million years old. They're a little bit younger than Ambirisaurus. And if you go down to Garbeja in the PE area, there are dinosaurs that are about 130 to 150 million years old. So there's a huge range, actually. One of the dinosaurs you might have heard of is called Nkwebasaurus, which is was found in the town of Kirkwood. In the Eastern Cape.
Oh, wow.
And that was a tiny little, it was like possibly a filter feeding dinosaur, like a flamingo almost.
Oh.
And it would have lived about 140, 150 million years ago.
So what I don't understand is I understand the concept of finding a fossil that is bones and it's quite big. It's maybe 2-3 meters long or whatever. But you said found in the Barberton area, you know, microbial remains from billions of years ago. Like, how does that survive for that long when it's microscopic, you know, super small?
Well, the chances are it's like it's a needle in the haystack kind of situation. You have to have just the right type of sediments. And often these sediments are like at the bottom of the ocean floor where there's very little oxygen to decay things. They have to be buried really quickly so that the structure is preserved. It doesn't rot or get scavenged. And then they have to undergo a process of basically turning into rock. And then being exposed again on land. And if you think of like the various chances that are involved in us finally finding something like that, it's mind blowing.
It is.
So it needs to be a perfect situation for that thing to
absolutely
to be looked after for generations and years to come. Listen, Professor Jonah, we're going to be back with you just after the news, and then we'll chat a little bit more about the dinos. Ons gesels 'n bietjie dinosourusse. Baie interessant om te weet, jy weet, van al hierdie goeders wat destyds gebeur het, wat nog nou ontrafel word in ons land, en dit was so baie goed wat ek nie geweet het nie. So, on the line with us, Professor Jonah, he's a professor at Wits, and he studies all these prehistoric animals and all of these fancy things that I know absolutely nothing about. But, Professor, I need to ask you, which species of dinosaurs are most prevalent in South Africa?
So, like, did we have T-Rexes, for instance?
Was there T-Rex in SA?
Sadly. But there are many other dinosaurs quite a bit more interesting, in my professional opinion.
But were they angry? Because rumor on the street is T-Rex was angry because his hands were so short, so he couldn't brush his teeth.
Yep. That's one hypothesis. There are many others. Well, you know, we have something that weighs almost twice as much as T-Rex from the Northern Free State area, right from just outside Golden Gate Highlands National Park. It's a thing called Ladumahati, and that was an animal that weighed 12 tons, which is twice as much as an elephant.
Wow. So was that an omnivore or a carnivore?
Well, it was a peaceful, unangry herbivore, I'm happy to report.
Yeah.
And it was actually it was related to this new dinosaur, Ambirisaurus, that the authors recently described from Zimbabwe. It was just a bit further along the line towards the giant sauropods.
Well, that's so boring.
That's
a boring dinosaur.
No, I like the herbivores more than the
didn't
the angry
we have
ones.
Any that were like completely angry at everything and just wanted to chow them with like sharp teeth?
Well, we have another dinosaur. It's a thing called Heterodontosaurus, and it is hypothesized to have functioned almost like an anteater, almost like an aardvark, sort of tearing into nests, and it has a combination of sharp teeth, a beak, and grinding teeth in the back. And it's supposed to be covered in spiky sort of proto-feathers like a porcupine almost.
Well, that sounds a little bit more interesting, but still not, I'm still not scared. No, I want to be scared. Did we have any pterodactyls, flying dinosaurs, maybe, that we found some interesting fossils of?
Yeah, we don't have evidence for pterodactyls just yet, and certainly they were here, but they have incredibly fragile bones, so they don't preserve well in the fossil record. But if you want something terrifying, imagine a crocodile, giant Nile crocodile, but one that walks on two legs and doesn't go back to the water. It stalks around the landscape and is covered in like massive body armor and has gigantic teeth that are sort of bigger than steak knives. And in fact, that sort of animal once walked around South Africa. And we've found just a few tantalizing bits of evidence of these things.
Who's
they're
that?
Called Rallus.
That's the one.
Yeah, but that was an angry animal.
Yes, we want him. Who's he?
Yeah, well, you're going to have to watch this space. We're actually describing a couple new species in the upcoming year.
That you're looking
This sort of crocodile.
Professor, did you just drop a little hint, but you haven't found the whole thing yet?
We're actually in the process of digging up the whole thing. You know, these digs, they don't just, you don't just go and 2 weeks later you've got your dinosaur.
Yeah.
We've been digging it in one hole for 4 years now.
Oh, my goodness.
And it might be another couple of years until we finish digging that hole. So these are big projects.
That sounds very, very scary. So what would you say from the species alive, and let's talk about South Africa because it's local, what, and it sounds like it might be the crocodile, but which species are then the closest living relatives to dinosaurs?
So dinosaurs fit very neatly between living crocodiles and living birds. They're a little bit closer to living birds. So dinosaurs share a lot of features with birds, like they have a wishbone. And they have three toes on their feet, like three prominent toes on their feet. So they're a little bit closer to birds, but birds and crocodiles share a common ancestor that would have started to branch off about 250 million years ago or so.
And surely something like a turtle, or what do you call it, a skulpot. Surely a skulpot is also a dinosaur.
It's very closely related to dinosaurs. It's actually probably the animal that branches off just before crocodiles and birds branch off. So it's in that general group.
Yeah. Okay.
It's very, very interesting. And I think I never thought of South Africa as being, you know, such a rich area for dinosaur fossils. But how many active dig sites are there around South Africa at the moment specifically looking for fossils?
There are dozens of active dig sites for people looking for fossils. In fact, we are having a meeting of South African paleontologists next week at this time in Golden Gate Highlands National Park. And there's 100 people in attendance. And they're a combination of faculty like me, researchers at museums, and students who are all studying the sort of vast South African fossil record.
That's amazing. And that spot is also amazing, isn't it, Jonah? It's just so visual and beautiful when you're there, Golden Gate.
Oh, it's stunning. I mean, it's just one of my favorite national parks. I go down there 6-7 times a year. And in fact, the world's oldest dinosaur embryos and eggs were found in that park. They're building a museum to sort of celebrate this incredible discovery. And the museum of shell is up, and hopefully they'll have a really nice exhibit soon.
How cool is that?
Yeah. So if you didn't know, South Africa was rich with dinosaurs back in the day. Mm. Not the terrifying ones, with the boring ones.
No, they're not boring. Jonah, I must say, like, I like South Africa because we don't have tornadoes and, like in America, you know, all the scary stuff happens in America. T-Rexes and tornadoes and tsunamis and stuff. Yeah, we quite safe.
Yeah.
So our dinosaurs are safe too. I like that.
No, I don't like that. Listen, we're going to be back with you in a second. We just need to run to the traffic quickly. And then I want to speak to you about the cradle of humankind, because that's also very fascinating. So Professor Jonah saam met ons van Wits af. Reën met Vrystaat vlaktes. Groot FM 90.5. Maybe a good question to ask, seeing that we're speaking about the Free State with Professor Jonah. Which one of the provinces in South Africa do you think is the richest when it comes to fossils?
Well, the best province, in my opinion, is the Eastern Cape province. The Eastern Cape has everything from sort of mammal origins to dinosaurs to lots of rock art and early human sort of Stone Age habitation. But it's actually quite hard to tell you which province is the best. There's even dinosaur fossils in Kruger National Park.
Oh, my wow. goodness. So these things were absolutely everywhere.
They got everywhere, yep. Really, really good at going all over the Earth's surface.
So, Professor, the one thing that I wanted to ask you is, we know just on the other side of Pretoria here is Kruger's Dorp, and that's well known to be the cradle of humankind. Now, why in the first place would they call it the cradle of humankind?
Well, I'll give you the shortest answer I can, but it's quite a lot of information. So we know that humans originated in Africa, and it's been years and years of debate about just where humanity originated. South Africa's got some of the earliest modern human beings, evidence for modern behaviors like representative art and so forth. That's all in the Western Cape. But the cradle of humankind in Kaapstad has some of our ancestors. So it has genera like Australopithecus and other species in our own genus, in Homo. And those animals, they're old. They're between sort of 500,000 years and up to 3 million years old. And they show us that, you know, humans didn't just appear on Earth's surface. We evolved from other animals. And the steps in our evolution include a variety of different things, and some of which were like Neanderthals. Others were things like what have been popularly called cavemen, things like the handyman or so forth. And they also include relatively small, sort of, you know, 4 foot high and, you know, just over a meter high, upright walking things called Australopithecus. And all of their fossils have been found in the cradle of humankind. So it tells the story of our journey, from ape-like ancestors to, you know, what represents the most abundant large animal on Earth today.
But the one thing that I do need to ask you is, this is all speculation, isn't it? Because now if I come across a skeleton or a fossil and, you know, I can piece together a rough outline of what this animal or whatever should look like, but I can't be 100% sure, especially if, you know, like, did it have scales? Did it have feathers? Did it have a normal skin or what it was? Isn't much of what you guys do still speculation?
So there is a fair element of speculation in what we do. And as scientists, we try to remove speculation wherever possible. For example, you talk about skin. I have a student who just came back from a field trip to the Western Karoo, and they found mammal relatives, old mammal relatives, 230, 240 million years old, and they're preserved as mummies with their skin intact, turned into bone. And so we know that that particular animal, a thing called Lystrosaurus, has scales on its feet. We know an awful lot about what it would have looked like as a living animal. And there are other dinosaur mummies and preserved feathers and stuff from around the globe. So we can fill in some of that speculative stuff.
So, yeah, you get some of the info somewhere and then you pass that over to, you know, new fossils that you find, because it might be part of the same, you know, dinosaur group or whatever.
That's exactly right. So there's a lot of inference that goes on. We can measure things that are alive today and say, oh, an elephant's leg bone is this big around. And by extension, if we find a dinosaur with a similar size leg bone, then we can say, well, it should have weighed somewhere in the ballpark of an elephant.
Okay, it makes sense. Now, the biggest thing, and I'm going to leave you on this question. We're running out of time. But we watched Jurassic Park, all right? Fears, like nobody's business, you know, everybody's scared the dinosaurs might be coming back if we have the technology. Now, the first question is, do we have the technology to be able to bring dinosaurs back? And from the bones and the fossils that you guys dig up, is there still enough DNA in the bones that we can recreate some sort of dinosaur in the future, maybe?
So that one is unfortunately a pretty firm and pretty sad no. What people have tried to do is actually retro-engineer chickens, which are living dinosaurs, but try to retro-engineer the genes of chickens so that they express things like teeth and long tails and scales everywhere. And that hasn't been particularly successful either.
Thank goodness. I'm really glad.
So I'm not going to be able to get myself like a baby T-Rex in the near future or something.
Probably not in this lifetime.
Okay, but maybe if science does evolve even further, then, you know, we might be able to pull the genetics from a bone and then give Dupi a small little T-Rex as a pet.
Didn't you watch the movies? It always goes wrong. Thank you so much, Jonah, for chatting to us today. Thank you for your time. It was really, really interesting. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me on the show.
And once you guys find that crazy angry alligators that you're busy digging up, please let us know.
Please.
I'll tell you everything you wanted to know about it as soon as it's out of the ground.
Fantastic.
Thank
Professor
you. Good
Jonah,
luck for that.
Thank you so much for your time, and we'll speak soon.
Bye now.
Cheers, bye. You need to calm down, Dupi. You need to calm down.
Soek een klein T-Rex.
Nee, dankie toch, ek kan nie.
Waar's my klein T-Rex?
Kuier maandag tot vrijdag saam Dupi en Nina 3 tot 6 net hier op die Groot Trek op Groot FM 90.5.